Hey, everybody. Welcome inside the Green 19 podcast brought to you by Packers News and JS Online. I am Ryan Wood alongside my colleague and partner, Tom Silverstein. Tom, it's apparently the short week this week, but I swear they're trying to make this a very long week in Green Bay with everything going on. It started with defensive coordinator Joe Barry testing positive for COVID-19 on Monday after the Packers won against Washington, and it has not slowed down from there. Later Monday, Davante Adams test positive, and Alan Lazard now put on the COVID-19 reserve list on this Tuesday. As Matt LaFleur said today, who knows? They're in advanced protocols. Who knows what tomorrow will bring? This could not be the end. What do you make of all the moving parts going on to this very short week that's felt very long?
Well, it's the worst thing that could have happened to them at this time. I mean, I just don't know how much more they can withstand losing two of their top two receivers right now. And then losing their defensive coordinator doesn't help. It does, you know, the one thing you can say about the Packers is that they have depth everywhere, and they have depth on the coaching staff with experience with Jerry Gray as a defensive coordinator who can call plays. So I don't think that's as big of a deal, but not having Adams and Lazard, they might have been able to figure out a way to compete without Adams, but without both those guys, man, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how they're going to do it. It's probably going to be Aaron Jones. You know, this is going to probably be a 45-touch game for him. They got to figure out ways to get him the ball.
And to take the bigger scope of it, it's not just Davante Adams and Alan Lazard, but also you look at the top three receivers, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, even if he is activated from IR, the guy hasn't played in four games. He hasn't practiced at all. He might as well be a non-factor. That's not to say that Marquez Valdes-Scantling is not a very good receiver. He's the clear number two. But when you've had a month off and you're coming back to the field, you don't expect a lot. So that's Aaron Rodgers' top three receivers right now. Davante Adams, COVID-19. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, currently IR. We'll see if he's activated. Maybe, maybe not. Not expect to have big production Thursday night. Alan Lazard, COVID-19. The other issue, though, the Packers' offensive line's not whole. So it's not like they have all their pieces up there. That's been a weekly thing this season. I'm with you. Aaron Jones getting a lot of touches. A.J. Dillon getting a lot of touches. They've got to run the football. But it's not like they have their full offensive line at their disposal either.
No, and they're going to have to rely on, one, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that's the field tilter that they have. And it's going to be tough, but, you know, they need a couple of guys. They just need a couple of guys to have career games. And it's kind of what happened to them last year when Alan Lazard had the breakout game in New Orleans. Without that game, you know, Davante Adams was out. Without that game, you know, they don't win down there. 2 years ago, it was Aaron Jones in Kansas City. And all of a sudden the guy, you know, catches seven passes for 159 yards and a touchdown. They win in Kansas City without Adams there. And I think Tanyan had like a 3-touchdown game in one of those games where Adams was out. So that's what they got to have. I mean, Equanimeous St. Brown has to have the game of his life. Randall Cobb has to have the game of his life. Juwan Winfrey has to like do something. You know, Taylor, maybe he might play. He's been activated off the COVID list. It's going to be a little bit of everything. They're just going to have to, Rodgers going to have to just spread the ball around and trust these guys and see where it goes.
Yeah, I was going to ask what you thought about, you know, who is the candidate that needs to step up the most or will step up the most, and why is his name Equanimeous St. Brown? Because I got a little feeling coming into this one. Equanimeous St. Brown might have a productive game and he might have some favorable matchups and might be able to take advantage of those. He's been a good receiver when healthy, and he's had production at this level. With that said, Equanimeous St. Brown is not Davante Adams. He's not even Alan Lazard. And you've got Amari Rodgers, you've got Randall Cobb. I guess it's a good thing that Aaron Rodgers traded for Randall Cobb, because they're going to need him Thursday night. And he's had some good moments in the first seven games as well. But yeah, with you, I'm curious what you think. Equanimeous St. Brown, is he the guy that you're watching the most that kind of have that big step up game, or who would you tab as most likely to be that player?
Well, that's the guy I've been on since the beginning of the year. I think he's a big game waiting to happen. I don't know if it'll be this game. It could be. I think he's more talented than anybody they'll put out on the field on Sunday. And he just is going to have to embrace the number one role, because Randall Cobb, you know, they can throw a lot to him, but they're going to pay some attention to Randall Cobb. They're not going to pay all that much attention to anybody else. Maybe Tanyan, you know, they might try to take Tanyan out. So I think this is the Equanimeous St. Brown game. He's got to come up big. And I still think it's going to be spread it around. Everybody has to contribute a little bit of something and just hope that, you know, the defense does enough to keep them in the game, you know, can come up with some turnovers and just make it fairly close. But boy, the numbers on paper, it just doesn't look good at all.
Let's take a step back and look at what this week is as a whole, because obviously COVID-19 has wrecked this week, but it was already without COVID-19, without Joe Barry, Davante Adams, Alan Lazard, and who knows who might be next. It was already as daunting of a task as you can get. The Packers, they're going on the road, short week, primetime game at the only undefeated 7-0 team in football. And today, Tuesday, Matt LaFleur said that they split their day into 2 days. First of all, Matt LaFleur came to the podium after 5 o'clock Tuesday evening, and the first thing he said was, "Anybody know what day it is?" Because that's just the kind of week that's been going on here in Green Bay. But he later said that it felt like 2 days, and for good reason, because the two walkthroughs today, the first, Matt LaFleur said, was Wednesday. Typical Wednesday elements, the second typical Thursday elements. They will then have a walkthrough / split practice tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning, before getting on the plane. That'll be a typical Friday, Matt LaFleur said. Getting on the plane at around 1:30 o'clock, flying to Phoenix, have nighttime meetings, and then your typical game day prep for Thursday. Spoon, you asked Adrian Amos at the end of his press conference today about the 9 overtime game with Penn State. He's an alum of Penn State in Illinois. And if he could ever envision doing that in the NFL, and he said no, but it's almost as bad as playing a short week game on the road across the country. It's almost as bad as what 9 overtimes is almost as bad as what the Packers are doing this week.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the thing about it is in some way, this has to be part of their game plan, I think, which is to not make it a long, drawn out, tons of incompletions kind of a game. The best thing that could happen for the Packers is if their running game is working and they can keep it to a limited amount of plays so that they're not worn out. I mean, it's not like they're coming off this horrendously physical, terrible game that they just played, but neither is Arizona. I mean, they're coming off a gimme against Houston, and they're at home. So the Packers have to play to that and try to keep the ball and keep their defense off the field and try to limit the number of plays there are.
You know, it should be said that along those lines, it's not like the Packers put a lot of contact on their running backs Sunday against Washington. I think Aaron Jones had the most carries with 6. Right. AJ Dillon had 3. And we talked in our last podcast after that game about the lack of running game and how it looked like the Packers frankly knew they couldn't run the ball and watch this defensive front, didn't try. But the more I've thought about it, though, Spoon, they should have felt the same way about Chicago Bears' defensive front. It's every bit the defensive front that Washington's is, and they had a great production on the ground against the Chicago Bears between Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. I wonder how much of it, I would imagine a good part of just not trying to run the ball against Washington was knowing how much they were going to need to run the ball, even before knowing anything about Davante Adams, knowing that they to keep the for Kyler Murray off the field, keep DeAndre Hopkins on the sideline, how much they were going to need to run the football. And they did kind of set their running backs up for that with the way that they approached the Washington game.
Yeah, I don't know if they purposely would do that. I think they kind of gave up on it. And I also think that based on the way Matt LaFleur answered a question, I think Rodgers turned a lot of running plays into passing plays in that game, because he sort of said, well, we needed to run it, you know? And whenever he says that, I'm like, well, you're the play caller. You are the guy calling the plays. Why aren't you running it? Well, then I remember, oh yeah, Rodgers has the ability to change all your plays at the line of scrimmage. So I don't know if it came down to that, but the net, net result is they didn't touch the ball a lot. And so both those guys can be leaned on. And you know, this is probably a game where LaFleur should throw out Kylan Hill. He should use Amari Rodgers. He should do whatever he hasn't done this year with those guys and just, you know, throw it against the wall and see what happens. And, you know, so they get blown out, they get blown out, but give those guys a chance to prove that they're capable of doing something.
Here's another thing to keep an eye on Thursday night. Matt LaFleur has done this in the past. Now, in the past couple of years, when he's had similar situations like this, it's been Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams. Now it would be Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. But I could see this very much being an Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon game where they're both on the field together, whether you see a lot of 21 personnel. Because Matt LaFleur has always shown that he cares a lot. One, he's very varied, multiple in his scheme. But he's always shown that he cares about getting the best 11 on the field. And you look at the best 11 for the Packers offense on Thursday night, A.J. Dillon's in that best 11. You know, this is one of those games where not only do they need to run the football, but you could be seeing a lot of those two tailback sets as well to try to get creative and to just try to get your best players on the field.
Yeah, I think that's probably so. You make a good point. You know, Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon are better than your top two receivers, so they should both be on the field as often as possible. And I think, you know, I would not be surprised if they come out in double tight end with a single wide receiver and they just try to pound the ball in the early going. I mean, and then, you know, or if Arizona's ultra aggressive, just run a bunch of bootlegs and play action and see if use that as their base defense and see if they can run on them. It's not going to be easy. I think Arizona's defense is really good, but you got to play to your strengths. And you're right, your strengths are the running backs.
Where would you stack this Arizona Cardinals defensive front up compared to the past two that the Packers have seen, Washington, Chicago, two of the best in the league? You know, Arizona's run defense is almost 10 yards per game better than the Chicago Bears, but and they've got J.J. Watt up front. Obviously, he got the trade from Houston this offseason. Chandler Jones is a good player. They've got some good players on the first and second level there. But maybe not as dominant. Clearly, not the pedigree that Washington has, and not the production that Chicago has. Where would you stack this Arizona defense brought up to the last two?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I haven't gotten to watch them a lot, and with the short week, I usually take a look and watch just to get an idea. And I haven't been able to do that, but I think they have a lot of depth. I think, you know, they've got Watt and Zach Allen, you know, up front. They've got Chandler Jones. They got Marcus Golden. I mean, these are guys who have given the Packers trouble in previous years. And they got, you know, Isaiah Simmons, the guy from kid from Clemson, who's, you know, all over the field. I think they're going to be a hard team to pass on, to seven-step drop on. Now, their run defense is pretty good, but I don't know if that's because they're blowing out some of these teams who just stop running, or if it's because they're really hard to run on. I guess that's something we'll find out. I do think there's some room for them to throw the ball, but they got to protect. And that's going to be, that'll be a key. I don't know. I think they're okay on the offensive line. You know, I do think though that Mercedes Lewis is going to have to play a lot and help out with Watt and Chandler Jones, but you know, we'll see. I know they'll be physical and they'll be coming at the Packers early on. They'll try to be, like Rodgers said, you know, the Packers have to withstand that first surge. And then if they can do that, then they can kind of regroup and maybe be in the game.
You know what? Mercedes Lewis is best 11 too this week. I mean, really?
Yeah.
Two tight ends and two running backs. That's just two running backs.
Yeah. Well, hey, nobody ever covers him when he goes out. So they got to use him in the passing game some more. And this is the perfect game for it. It's really a good game to use Tonyan and Mercedes Lewis quite a bit and try to do a lot of misdirection, try to find some, you know, try to capitalize on Arizona's aggressiveness up the field and see if they can get some of that trap game going and get Aaron Jones, you know, to the second level.
To your point, Spoon, Mercedes Lewis, 37 years old, how about 12 yards per catch this season? And okay, he's not blowing the NFL up with as a receiver, but he has caught 9 of his 10 targets for 108 yards, which is one fewer catch and one more yard than he had all of last season.
Yeah, has anybody and tapped it's been 7 games. On the first attempt? I don't know.
It's like Mercedes Lewis said, nobody wants to tackle him. Like they haven't covered him, but they have tried to tackle him, and they are bouncing off like they're rubber balls, like just boom, boom. It's ping pong out there. Like he's a big guy, so he might not be able to move the swiftest, but he's still got plenty of power there.
Yeah. I mean, you can't win a game based on throwing to Mercedes Lewis, but you gotta, again, it's going back to, you got to use everybody. You have to use absolutely everybody. And I think Rodgers will. I think he knows this is the only way he can win is hit the open guy, take what the defense gives you. You don't have to force the ball to Davante Adams. You don't have to force it to Randall Cobb. Go for the guy who's open.
You might not be able to win a game throwing to Mercedes Lewis, but that's the whole point of this. This week they might need to win a game by throwing to Mercedes. Like that's where they're at. Is they're going to be riding the backs of guys that you don't usually see in your fantasy football lineup. So it's just a different week. On the other side of the ball, no Joe Barry. I'm curious what you think, how significant you think that's going to be, but they'll have Jerry Gray, who has been a defensive coordinator twice before in his career with the Buffalo Bills back in the early aughts. And then a decade later for, I think, 3 seasons with the Tennessee Titans. Jerry Gray's defensive coordinator pedigree, his history of being a defense coordinator in this league had to be a reason, had to be part of the appeal when Matt LaFleur hired him to be his defensive backs coach. It's obvious he's got a heck of a resume. I'm not sure he ever imagined that he would be the play caller for a game, especially under these circumstances. So your thoughts on the absence of Joe Barry, but also the, I guess, the 1 week emergence of Jerry Gray into that play calling role.
Yeah, I sort of feel like the game plan will be, you know, in the books when they get there with only slight variation from Jerry Gray. I think where the difference could be, would be, all right, something's not working. How quickly do they adjust? You know, what adjustments do they make? You know, Joe Barry knows this defense better than anybody on the staff. And that's the advantage they have with him. Now, Jerry Gray was fairly aggressive guy when he was defensive coordinator, kind of dependent on what team he had, but he liked to be aggressive. I just don't know if his personality is going to come out in this, because I think everything is so scripted and so collaborative that maybe a lot of the calls will just be, you know, checking off the list and, okay, they're in trips left. This is what we do in trips left, you know, or they're in double tight end. This is what we play. This is the personnel we play. It might just be something like that.
Collaborative is the right word, because Matt LaFleur was very clear that while Jerry Gray is going to be the defensive play caller, it will be a collective effort. And one example of that I found very interesting is that it will be Kirk Olivadotti, the inside linebackers coach, relaying the play call from Jerry Gray onto the field to Devondre Campbell, who wears the green dot communication helmet. Devondre Campbell will then be in charge of communicating the play call to his other 10 teammates. And so it's going to be kind of, instead of more of a chain of command, it's more just group effort to fill in for Joe Barry in every way that they can.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think they will, I think their number one priority is going to be making sure the top receivers are double teamed, and they're going to have to, I think they're going to probably play a lot of zone. And I think they're going to try to keep five guys up at the line of scrimmage and stop the run, and then just play a lot of zone behind it and make Arizona work to get down the field.
We'll see how much they're able to make Kyler Murray work, because Adrian Amos said it today. He was asked about how many rushing yards Taylor Heinicke went off for, 95 against the Packers on Sunday. And Adrian Amos said, Kyler Murray's a little faster. That might be a few more, just a touch. Hey, Taylor Heinicke's pretty fast now, but Kyler Murray's he's got stupid speed. I mean, it's absurd the type of athlete. You know, Aaron Rodgers talked about Kyler Murray today. Said he's never seen him play baseball, but he's pretty sure that Kyler Murray made the right choice, even being the 9th overall pick by the Oakland A's, to go into football and take that path, because he's been in Aaron Rodgers' words, he's slippery, but has a great arm, can really throw. He's been a dynamic athlete and dynamic quarterback. And now the Packers have to face him. What the heck do you do against that guy? You know, Devondre Campbell said, you don't stop him, you just slow him down. So how do you slow down someone with a quarterback with that kind of speed?
You do exactly what teams do to Aaron Rodgers. You play two shell. You want all your guys facing the quarterback, so that if he takes off running, they can, you know, they don't have their backs to him. I think you have to play a lot of zone, and you're going to give up a lot of yards, but you got to make them work for it. Make him work for it. Maybe frustrate him a little bit. Keep him in the pocket. Make him try to get the ball down the field, you know, with some safeties deep. You know, maybe he gets frustrated and starts throwing it deep, and they got some shots at picking him off. I just think you got to play the odds here, and he might throw for 450 yards, but if you can keep him out of the end zone, force some field goals, then maybe that's a decent trade-off. So that's what I look for. I can't imagine them playing a ton of man on DeAndre Hopkins, on AJ Green, on Christian Kirk. I mean, maybe they can put Stokes on one of those guys and play a little man inside. Maybe they'll have Kevin King and they'll let him play some press up on the slot. But geez, I would just do what everybody's done to Rodgers.
It sounds like that's a possibility for Kevin King to return and perhaps Preston Smith as well. Do you think there's, I want to ask the question. It's in some ways it's a foolish question, but I wonder if there's any even small possibility to this. Do you think if those guys are close, given everything else going on this week, given how daunting of a task this is going to be, considering all the moving variables, they think about maybe resting Preston Smith and Kevin King another week if they're close, just because this is not that you throw a game in the bag. But so many things are stacked up against this team as it is anyway, going on the road to this opponent in prime time, COVID-19, short week, cross-country flight. Do you think let's get him rested for Kansas City?
No, I don't, because here's the thing. So I think you come out there, you give them your best shot. If it starts to become a blowout, then you can always pull those guys and put them on the side. But this is, you know, this is a game against a 7-0 team. Who knows what could happen? I mean, your chances of winning this game are slim to none, maybe, but you got to at least show your guys that, you know, they could compete with Arizona. And if it turns out that it's a blowout, I'd put Jordan Love in the game in the third quarter, you know, and that would be the same with Preston Smith and Kevin King and just clear the bench. But if you get a chance to maybe smack them in the mouth a little bit, just start out and send a little bit of a message, then I think you got to do it.
Do you think Kevin King and Preston Smith play then?
I do. What you got? I think they'll both play. I'm on the other side of the ball. I don't think MVS will play. I mean, I think they're giving him every chance, but I don't know if you want to throw him out there without any practice. I think they could do Malik Taylor because, you know, he's Malik Taylor and he's mostly a special teams guy, can help you a little bit. But I would be worried if I were them about MVS having not practiced in pads or anything like that.
You know, one week earlier, the Cleveland Browns threw out Jarvis Landry without any practice. Now, that was a knee, not a hamstring. I don't know what the difference is, but it's about the same. I think he missed like four games, about the same situation. The one thing I would say when it comes to Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I think that Davante Adams' appearance on the COVID-19 list and Alan Lazard's has zero bearing on whether or not he's activated from IR. I think it is a non-factor.
Right. I agree.
If that hamstring has any question whatsoever, it doesn't matter how many receivers are on COVID-19 list. He's not playing because it's a long season. This is 1 week and you got to look at the long term.
Yeah. I mean, just think how much you'd be kicking yourself if you put him out there and he re-injured the hamstring and now he's out for another 4 weeks. And, you know, you get Davante Adams back. I mean, Davante Adams is only going to be out a week and probably Lazard also. So you would just be kicking yourself with this opportunity to bring him back. It's the same with Bakhtiari. You're not going to bring Bakhtiari back this week. It'd just be stupid. But if he is in good enough shape, you know, if he's been cutting, if it really looks strong, I would use him in some purpose plays. You know, I wouldn't play him 45 snaps, but, you know, unless he's feeling really, really good, but I would use him to clear out, you know, try to get some clear out and maybe work some guys underneath, make them respect him.
You know, what one other weapon on the Cardinals offense that you didn't mention when you're going through the gauntlet earlier, Zach Ertz. Too.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of an embarrassment of riches that they have going on there. Even if AJ Green isn't what AJ Green was 5 years ago, he's still pretty good. DeAndre Hopkins, Christian Kirk. Who do you put Eric Stokes on this week?
It's a really good question. I guess boy, you know, I was going to say Hopkins. He could just turn a guy around in circles. And I don't know if you want to do that to Stokes. Christian Kirk, you know, is a guy who can fly, but is it worth putting him on there every single down? Maybe you're just playing sides and let them try to decide. Maybe you're playing so much zone that you don't care which side anybody lines up on. I don't know.
That would be my guess, is sides and zone. But I don't know that you want to expose him for a full game against DeAndre Hopkins yet. That's a lot.
Yeah, if DeAndre Hopkins were a guy who you were worried about running past him every down, you know, like Ja'Marr Chase, then yeah. But DeAndre Hopkins can do everything. And so, you know, if Stokes is playing him deep, then he's going to just eat him up short. And if he's playing him short, then he's going to eat him up deep. And I think you have to probably play it straight up.
A couple special teams notes to get to before we go. Maurice Drayton and Matt LaFleur look back at the field goal that was blocked by Washington on Sunday and said that it was kind of a two-pronged issue, which is, I guess, a nice way of saying everything was a problem. But there was leakage. It's the popular word. That's a good word. I like that word, leakage. There was leakage in the middle of that offensive line. John Runyon got knocked back off the ball. But they also both said that Mason Crosby had a lone line drive and the ball came out low. And it, you know, it might have been an issue even without the leakage. How do you see it? Which do you think was the bigger issue there?
Well, you know, I'm not an expert, but I continue to see Bohorquez having to spin that ball. And I just know that that's not a good thing. Now, maybe is Bohorquez trying to, like, are his arms too far out, or maybe not, you know, not far enough. And so he's not catching it with the right, you know, where the ball should be when he's about to put it down. I don't know. I'm just not smart enough to know that. And so I guess it's just going to be, you know, week to week and we'll see. But definitely Crosby kicked it low. I sort of thought that even with that penetration, he should have still been able to knock it through, you know, but I don't know. In my next life, I'll be a special teams expert.
Well, if it's snap hold, there's no way that it's Corey Bohorquez's fault, because he's the Packers' best player. So moving on. TJ Slayton had the block, and Maurice Drayton dropped this nugget this week. Apparently, TJ Slayton is a little bit of Vince Carter to him. He can really get up. He's got some big hops and can dunk, which, Spoon, that's something that I'd really like to see. On my list, a really great punt and TJ Slayton dunking are the two things that I feel like are the most enjoyable out of this Packers team. But I wonder if that, you know, if they found a guy there. It was the first field goal that the Packers had blocked since the Tone Jones, another really gifted athlete, got one in October of 2015. So it'd been 6 years. I wonder if they found something there with TJ Slayton, not just as a defensive lineman, but, you know, kind of blocking field goals.
Well, Arizona will be taking a look at him and, you know, definitely aware of him. And then Drayton will try to build off that. So I don't know. We'll see how that works. I just know that if you can play on special teams, that usually gives you a shot in the arm to play more on offense or defense. And so maybe Slayton will start to see a couple more snaps. It'd be interesting to see him playing more with Kenny Clark and, you know, trying to eat up some blockers so Kenny Clark can get free.
We'll see if special teams has as big of a factor on Thursday night's game as it did, mostly for the good, some for the bad on Sunday. But this is one of those games the Packers are going to need all three phases, everything they can get, because it is a daunting, monumental, gargantuan task before the COVID-19 stuff. So you just add that on top. We'll both be there in Arizona to cover whatever does happen Thursday night. Make sure you stay to PackersNews.com for full coverage going into that game. After that game, there's going to be a lot to talk about, and we'll see. You know, keep on Packers News all day Wednesday and Thursday too, because there's a chance this COVID-19 situation is not done yet and will not end at Joe Barry, Davante Adams, and Alan Lazard. It's probably the biggest question going on with this team right now. So we'll have full coverage, full news, PackersNews.com. Until then, he's Tom. I'm Ryan. Thank you so much for listening along, everyone.